Okay, we're going to call the Thursday evening meeting to order. With us thus far, Senator Kelly, I expect Senator Olson, and Senator Dunleavy, Senator Fairclough. So we have a quorum. See, it's my understanding that we will not be taking up Senate Bill 138, which was the gas bill. So if anybody's here for gas, not tonight. But we will be taking up Senate Bill 64. This is a bill we started a while ago, actually, and I think Senator Coghill's here. What we had was a PowerPoint presentation. What we'd like to do tonight, it's a pretty large bill, so we'd like to go through it in a little more detail, section analysis, so we can understand the bill, and then take any questions from the committee. Monday morning, we're not doing gas Monday either. Is that right, Senator Kelly?
Monday we'll probably, yes, we'll have the CS, or excuse me, the amendments to us by tomorrow.
By Monday night.
We hope to have the amendments or suggestions for a CS into us by tomorrow, and it's possible we'll have it up Monday,
okay.
but for sure Tuesday.
All right, so Monday morning, we may take up the Senate Bill 138. If not, we'll just continue our discussion here with Senate Bill 64. Okay, so with that, then Tuesday we plan on taking public testimony on this bill, Senate Bill 64, the Omnibus Crime Bill. So with that, we have the sponsor here, Senator Coghill, and his trusty staff, Jordan Schilling. Senator Coghill, could you please join us and tell us about the bill? Senator Coghill, floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coghill from Fairbanks North Pole area, thank you for taking up again the Senate Bill 64. Greatly appreciate it. I'm going to, if it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, what I'd like to do is have Jordan Schilling, who has lived and breathed this bill for the last several months, kind of go through the sectional with you. There are a couple of points, though, that I would like to kind of emphasize because of the last meeting. My staff got in a little bit of trouble because I had put a couple of things in a bill that probably known to me primarily were areas where I felt fairly strongly on. For years, we've been trying to get a felony theft threshold, excuse the tongue twister, level higher. And at this point, 750 is high as I can actually commit to. And I know I started off much higher, but it's really because of the business community. I just have not been able to get to them to agree. And I think that just practically, I don't know that I can have enough public support and support in this whole building for me to move beyond that. So I just wanted to say that out loud. I do personally believe that there's a better way to do it. Then the other thing is the commission in here does have a cost to it, but I don't want to apologize for the cost. I think that's going to be very important. What we've done, you've heard both the Supreme Court Justice Carbonetti speak to it. You've heard other people, and I would only reiterate that we have created sentencing structures that really need to be reviewed. That is the mandated sentencing structures. They need to be reviewed and commented on and maybe suggestions to change. Some of the court flexibility, some of the standards need to be looked at. Some of our DUI laws over the years have come to us in kind of various different arrangements that we need to think through and look at probably in a little more holistic fashion. So I think the commission can help us think through some of those things. Certainly, I think the legislature carries some prime responsibility for it, but I think the commission is going to be one of the main things. The other thing is alcohol really is kicking the feet out from under us in Alaska. I think there are some things in here, the 24/7 program being the key element. But in that key element, you're going to see us trying to put together a funding structure for those that come out of jail. I expect that we're going to have savings from jails. I mean, one of the primary purposes is to keep from building another jail within the next 10 or 15 years, which it should already be on the drawing board if we're going to do that. If we do not create an avenue for post-jail accountability and programmatic approaches, no doubt our recidivism is going to be higher. So with a 24/7 accountability and some programmatic approach to those getting out of jail, those are elements I think that from what I've seen nationally and in the state, our recidivism is going to go down with those kind of accountable measures. So I just wanted to reiterate some of those things that you got to hear at the highest level, but I did abandon my staff to go through it. And with that, Mr. Chairman, unless there's questions for me specifically, probably a sectional review would be the wisest thing. It is a fairly long bill, but we can go through those sections rather rapidly. And so unless you have questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. And by the way, I want to welcome Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You actually brought it up. I know it's in the bill buried somewhere, but the felony threshold. It does seem like 750 is kind of a small amount for felony, and I know it costs us a fortune to put and bring forward a felony case to the courts. But you said there wasn't much wiggle room there?
Mr. Chairman, there are groups in Alaska, mostly in the National Federation of Independent Businesses, who feel very strongly that if it goes up to $1,000, this portion of the bill will not make it. And to be fair, I've been trying for almost 8 years now to get that level up and have hit that ceiling every single time and have not been able to get the bill advanced. So as you can see, it's a practical matter on my part. I actually believe that it should be higher, but I can tell you the commitment I made was to keep it at this level so that we could move forward.
Okay, and we'll get into the costs and the fiscal notes as we go along, but do you have a ballpark idea what it costs to bring forward a felony case versus a misdemeanor case?
Off the top of my head, I do not. Okay. I can get that to you before you make action on this bill, though.
Well, and I see Annie Carpenter and some others in the audience that probably could help us with
the
that.
The way I've described it, Mr. Chairman, it's a little bit like using a D8 cat to do the maintenance on your front lawn. Yeah. I mean, it's really that different.
Okay. Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, there's a reason why Fred Meyer, we have a letter from Fred Meyer, so I just want to put that on the record. And some of these smaller, that would be big business, but there's small businesses that don't want the change. But if we looked at the underlying problem, I think what it is they're afraid that police officers won't respond because they have to investigate at different levels. So maybe we could hear what the real issue is, because if the real issue is investigation and holding people accountable versus what we bear in costs as a state, and that is the corrections, the courts, and building that entire case, maybe there's something that we can address to take a look at that number.
Mr. Chairman, there's two things I'm trying to do. One of them is I'm trying to get an audience with some of the council that has the NFIB, and I just have not been able to get that, partly because of my schedule, partly because of theirs. The other thing is, I did have one police officer actually testify in committee that has created some of that pushback, and they said they didn't respond to misdemeanors. And then I've got a group of police officers who said that is just not the case. It's just that higher level crimes will take them quite often, take them off property crimes issues. But misdemeanors and property crimes are on their list of things to do. And it was just, to me, unfortunate that at the time I got that one, and that seems to be one of the main things that people are keying in on. So I could get all kinds of testimony, but I still have that one there on the record. And so it's just something we got to deal with.
Okay. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, my point is that there's a reason that that the other side of the coin, per se, those that have been victimized by somebody stealing from them, they have an issue. And if we understood what that issue was, maybe we could work to be able to advance the number, because we are being, it's causing the state to actually have to pay a significant portion of money to be able to process these through. And so I would hope that their goal isn't to just throw people or kids in jail. They have a higher calling for accountability, would be my guess. And maybe we could ask them questions to find out. I'm sure it's much more complicated, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, it is somewhat complicated. Some of these misdemeanors can be a year in jail and a $10,000 fine. You know, so this is no small matter, but there's civil action that they can get. Having a felony, though, gives them a much bigger leverage. There's no doubt about that. But I think if I was speaking to NFIB right now, I would say these are the very people that you're going to have resumes in front of you that if they have a felony on them, you're not going to be able to hire them. And they may have very well reformed over the 10 years that they have done that. So it's one of those things that I think is highly unfortunate that you would use such a big hammer that has such a long, lifelong effect. Rural communities probably get much more dramatic effects because once you do something in an area outside of the road system, the costs are just higher, and naturally you're going to have that problem. But I made the case, but I do need to talk to the NFIB, and it's really kind of a reality matter. This part of the bill just would not make it, I think, at this point.
Okay. Senator Kaler.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to point out that I've never had an electronic device disrupt this committee before.
I think Senator Dunleavy knows that he's had to buy us donuts tomorrow.
That was in my phone.
Yeah, at least your phone.
That's like saying that was not my dog. It was in your pocket. So, Mike, but I do have an actual pertinent.
You have a question?
I'd like to know what the difference between. I'd like an analysis, and if it's in here, I didn't see it, between what we're paying for felonies versus non-felony. If we raise that threshold, is there a way to just have it kind of gradated? If we raise it this much, it's going to cost, or it's going to save the state this much. If it's raised more, it's going to save it this much more. I think that's a valuable discussion right now, because as much as I want to help constituents who are struggling with this, the decision honestly is made at this table, and we're held accountable to them. But we need the information, and I'd like to have that information.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll try to do my best to get a simple matrix on that. You do have to call a jury. You call after grand jury. You have to do the charging. You have to do the plea bargaining. There are definitely cost factors, and I'll try to get them quantified in a good, easy metrics that I can show the difference between. If you had a felony of $800 under a felony or an $800 under a misdemeanor, what the cost difference would be. So I'll kind of set it at the $800 level and go from there.
Okay. I think, actually, tonight, I don't want to go too late because I know we've been kind of going late every night this week. And so we'll... Once you walk us through the bill, and then we'll take questions at the end. You have several people online too. Rick Allen with the Office of Public Advocacy, Ron Taylor, Department of Corrections, Quinlan Steiner, Public Defender, and Suzanne DiPietro with the Alaska Judicial Council.
DiPietro.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I think most of them are here for questions. Okay. And I've instructed Jordan Schilling, who's going to walk you through the sectional, to do it rapidly.
Okay. Well, and then, like I said, we'll take questions at the end, and probably more likely have this bill before us again in the morning. In the morning, we take additional questions and/or then get into the fiscal notes, which is, of course, of great interest to us.
And, Mr. Chairman, at this point, if I'll just sit back and I'll start writing up whatever questions I think, and I'll leave him at the desk for you unless you require my presence here.
No, that's fine. You can let Jordan go solo here, Senator Coghill. Okay, thank you, Senator Coghill. Jordan, if you can put your name on the record, please.
Thank you, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. And what we have before us is version D. And what I'd like to do is just quickly describe the eight main components of the bill, and then I'll go through in detail section by section. So the eight main pieces of Senate Bill 64, it establishes a 24/7 sobriety program that's used to prevent offenders from drinking. Senate Bill 64 creates the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. It expands a program called PACE, which is a different way of doing probation. It requires that the Department of Corrections conduct more assessments on their prisoners. Senate Bill 64 also establishes a recidivism reduction fund, and that's to grant money to transitional reentry programs. The bill, of course, increases the felony theft threshold from $500 to $750. It establishes stricter penalties for attempted abduction. That's the first few sections of the bill. And then lastly, the bill incentivizes treatment. So as I said, the first three sections of the bill, they fill a gap in our criminal codes relating to attempted child abduction. And last committee I described a scenario where that might happen, but really what it is it's impersonating a parent in an attempt to abduct a child. And on the books today, you could only charge someone that attempted that with criminal mischief. I believe criminal mischief in the fourth degree, which is a much lesser crime than what we're seeking to establish here in this bill. We're seeking to make it a crime of custodial interference in the second degree. And so that's, again, if someone impersonates a parent and attempts to abduct a child. So really the main of the first three sections, we are doing that in Section 2. That's where the new language is. Sections 1 and 3 simply just changed to track for the changes that we're doing in Section 2.
Yeah, Senator Kennedy, go ahead.
On that particular issue, will there be accommodations, for example, to contact a school to let them know if there is a custodial issue, and that, in other words, how do the schools know if there is a dispute over custody?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I suppose the schools wouldn't necessarily know. But upon the school reporting it to law enforcement, but you're right. There's no mechanism here to report.
Yeah, I just anyway. It's okay. Just an issue. It's an issue that comes up occasionally, and I wasn't sure if there was a mechanism within the bill itself to alert schools and school districts.
Senator Frickler.
Mr. Chairman, it depends on the level of custodial agreement. There's restraining orders that sometimes are placed on parents, and schools are notified if restraining orders are in place so that they can protect the child appropriately. But beyond that, I'm not sure if there are other ways besides the parent actually notifying the school district to make sure that there are other people that shouldn't be picking up the child. There's a list that's provided to as a parent, when I was in school, I could say who could pick up my child.
Senator Caldwell?
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say that in order to have your child picked up, you're going to have an approved list that would pick them up if there's going to be that. So this shows that once somebody tries to violate that, then they would be warned that it's going to be a criminal mischief issue. So it was put in, by the way, in committee by Senator Wilkowski, and he could probably help us describe some of it, but it was a very convincing argument that people had actually experienced how to do the problem with this, and they had no charge to levy. So.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we go back to the issue of the felony breakoff, the felony cutoff that's there, has the governor or has the administration weighed in on where they're sitting as far as what limit they want to see, or do they care?
I have not asked him, Mr. Chairman.
I guess I just will comment. I think as you look at some of the rural issues, then some of the felons that are represented out there in rural Alaska, this certainly at a $750 limit does not do them any favors, and especially if they're trying to get jobs when they out-migrate from rural Alaska to the cities. I'm very much in favor of increasing the amount of that's there for the felony cutoff, because I just see people that are disenfranchised getting the short end of the stick from now till they die, because that felony will be on their record until they're put in a grave. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I just want to make my position known on that.
And Mr. Chairman, my problem has not been with the administration, nor, quite frankly, with this body, but I know that I'm going to have a hard time moving this forward unless I can make the case to some of the business owners. So that's where my efforts lie.
Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
With all due respect to business owners, and I'm a business owner too, out in rural Alaska. Business owners, except for ones that are elected, do not vote. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, obviously, we're going to have more discussion on this.
Yes, I will take that to the folks who have made the case, and I will keep pushing back.
Okay. Excellent. We'll have more discussion on it. The cost is a big issue to the Finance Committee. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator.
You know, just reflecting on Senator Olson's comments, we've had several bills through this community that's trying to help small businesses with reductions of corporate income tax. We had a bill just in front of us here this last week that was trying to incentivize small businesses, and so we are doing things to try to help them out. I just think that we need to hear what their issue is and then balance it, because like you, young folks can make bad decisions and so can older folks, so we'll just continue that conversation, I guess.
Okay, very good. Continue, George, please.
So the next 15 sections are felony theft, as we just discussed. There are about 14 areas in statute where you must go in and change the monetary amount, so that's why it takes so many sections to do so. So sections 20, 21, and 22 establish the 24/7 sobriety program in pretrial. And as you can see on page 10, starting at line 25, we say that a person can be court-ordered into the 24/7 sobriety program. And by the way, the meat of that program, the language where you can see how the program actually works, is on page 14. If that person has been charged with an alcohol-related or substance abuse-related offense, and if that offense is an unclassified felony, a Class A felony, a sexual felony, or a misdemeanor or felony crime of domestic violence, the court can order that person onto 24/7 pretrial. So again, 21, 22, pretrial. 23 is where we deal with how one can get credit for time served in a treatment facility. So this section incentivizes treatment. What it does is, in 2007, there was a bill passed that really restricted an offender's ability to get credit for time served while in residential treatment. And what our bill does is it expands some of the things that a treatment program can allow an offender to do. So for example, if one is in treatment, they are able to leave the facility, they can get a day pass, assuming it's limited to time and purpose, and they can pursue employment, they can pursue voc-tech, they can pursue volunteering, or anything that is, you know, directly related to their treatment. So that could be an NA meeting or an AA meeting off campus. It could be a variety of things. And so we're expanding that a little bit to incentivize treatment, because people will not be interested in voluntarily entering treatment and paying for it by themselves if they are not going to get credit for that time served.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I could just add to that, this was a source of huge debate in the committee because of a court case. A Nygren was the name of the court case, and it's called a Nygren credit. And it really goes to the fact of, if you're supposed to be in jail, how can we make sure that it's jail time you get counted for? And we tried to allow, as best we knew how, treatment while they're still getting jail time credit. Anything that goes outside of what is highly accountable is going to be hard to get to. So we got right close to the edge and tried to keep it that way because they're really supposed to be in jail unless they're getting some jail time. It's a very narrow scope of people who will who get that credit. And it was a test between the public defend, or actually those who defend people and those who prosecute people. And I think we hit a reasonable balance on it. So you're going to probably hear some on this, but I think we worked with the Department of Law to try to find what we thought was the place where those who should be incarcerated do not get kind of freedom. They have to be actually showing benefit of treatment. Then they can get jail time credit for it. So I just wanted to make sure, because you're going to hear some discussion on that in or out of this committee, but I think we found a really decent balance on this. So my apologies for jumping in.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Coghill. So treatment being, what, 30 days?
Through the chair, treatment could be, you know, most of these guys will be seeking treatment before their trial, so it's really just the amount of time between the charge and the trial, and that could vary.
Gotcha. Thank you.
So continuing on, Section 24, we're going back to talking about 24/7 sobriety, and I just described how Sections 20 through 22 create 24/7 sobriety in the pretrial phase. So what this section does, Section 24, creates 24/7 sobriety in probation. And so again, you can see here on line 26 of page 13 that one condition of probation could be a judge could order you to do testing under AS 3305-020G, and that's on the next page. And so if you'd like, I can point you to what I'm calling the meat of the program. So that's on the next page, page 14. Starting at subsection G. So subsection G, that's on line 20. So the commissioner shall establish a program, that's the commissioner of corrections, and that program requires twice a day testing, in person if it's practicable, and that's testing for alcoholic beverages or random testing for controlled substances. And if there is a violation, there's a swift response. And so that's what you see in subsection 2, that's starting on line 27. So if there's a violation, this bill provides a way for the probation officer or the prosecutor's office or local law enforcement to send a notice. They've got 24 hours to send that notice. And then that way law enforcement can respond and the sanction can be applied.
Senator Kelly.
Jordan, do you happen to know how the testing is done? Is it all person to person?
Through the chair, Senator Kelly, not always. So South Dakota is the pioneer of this program. They started in 2005, and they've got about 90% of the people in the program doing in-person testing with another human. But there's 10% of the people in some of these states that live in an area that's rural enough and inconvenient enough to test twice a day where they'll use electronic monitoring. So that's the ankle bracelet. It could be a home-based device where you simply just need a landline connection.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this program will work anywhere in Alaska that has a landline and has local law enforcement.
I'm just kind of thinking about the landline part of it. I bet you that's overcomable. I know nothing of these things. It's this technology far beyond me, but it just seems that there's got to be some enterprising person that knows about zeros and ones that can come up with a device that you could stick on the internet and do this. And make a bunch, maybe the state should invest in something like that, seriously.
Research at the university.
There you go.
There you go.
Through the chair, Senator Kelly, I am not an expert, but I do. I am aware, though, that they do have some devices that work wirelessly on cell networks. So we've just discussed the meat of the 24/7 program. That's on page 14, starting subsection G. But let's move up that very same page up to subsection F, which we kind of skipped over. Now, subsection F establishes an entirely different program. It's called PACE, and it's a different way of doing probation. So in Alaska, we have a big problem with people on probation violating the conditions of their probation, committing new crimes, and repeatedly coming in and out of the system. And it's one of the Department of Corrections' biggest cost drivers. We've, like I've said in the last meeting, we have one of the highest recidivism rates in the country, and PACE is designed to address that. So under PACE, when someone violates a condition of their probation, so for example, consuming alcohol, using drugs, missing an appointment, that individual is arrested immediately. They're brought to court within 72 hours, and if the offender violates again, the process is repeated. And so every single probation violation is dealt with quickly, and a sanction is applied each time. So on page 14, starting with line 2, we say the commissioner shall establish a program, that's the Commissioner of Corrections. And this program, while it does rely on swift sanctions, much like 24/7 sobriety, it's a little bit different. This relies on random testing for controlled substances. And it takes away the discretion from probation officers. So if there is a violation, that probation officer does not have a choice about filing a petition to revoke their probation. So here in the bill, line 9 says that the probation officer shall file a petition by the close of the next business day. So sections 27 and 28 take that program I just described and give the parole board the ability to use the program. So section 29 of the bill is where we get into assessments. So section 29 gives the Commissioner of Corrections a new duty, and that duty is to establish a program to conduct assessments of the risks and needs of offenders who are sentenced to serve a term of incarceration of 30 days or more. So currently the Department of Corrections only conducts assessments on less than half of their felons, hardly any of the misdemeanants. And it's very difficult to know if an offender is appropriate for the PACE program, or if they need substance abuse treatment or mental health treatment. And so the point of requiring the department to do more assessments is so that we can link offenders up with those services that we know they need. But we don't know they need it unless we assess them. And an assessment takes about 45 minutes to conduct. It's done by probation officers in the institutions, and the fiscal note reflects that the department estimates that they'll need 11 probation officers to handle the increased volume of the assessments. So section 30 of the bill establishes the Recidivism Reduction Grant Fund. I touched on this a little bit last time, but the way that we release prisoners in Alaska is not working, and it's probably the result. It's probably why we have one of the highest recidivism rates in the country. And what we do here in Alaska, more often than not, is we release these individuals into the parking lot after their incarceration. They don't have first month's rent. They don't have any resources whatsoever. They can't get a job, and oftentimes they'll go right to a homeless shelter if that's even an option for them. And they're back in prison. Most of our recidivism occurs within the first 6 months. And so it's really a critical period where if we could provide some things to those offenders for a limited amount of time, but if we could provide a safety net such as, and you can find this on page 18, line 13 is where we get into the criteria. This fund distributes money to programs that have case management and sober living, so that's a structured environment. And the program must either provide treatment on site, that would be mental health or substance abuse treatment, or at least have the ability to refer them to treatment. And now again, if the department is doing more assessments, when these offenders reach these reentry centers after their release, an assessment will have already been done on them, and the reentry center will have an idea of what they need. The final requirement for the program is the program must require employment or voc training or some kind of volunteer. And then we put a maximum on the number of days one may live in this reentry program. And so an original version of the bill had it at 150 days. Getting some feedback from providers and some people that work in reentry, we heard that 150 days is really not sufficient for reentry, and a year might be more appropriate.
Senator Coghill, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, on this one, this is actually one of the cost drivers as well. Right now, it resides in this version in the Department of Corrections, and I think the granting and the accountability measures are already residing within the Department of Health and Social Services. And as we get into the next version of this, we intend to change this to show that we don't have to have new employees, we don't have to do new training, and it would go, but it would require that Department of Health and Social Services work with the Department of Corrections in maintaining, establishing, and working this. So yeah, I think you'll see us trying to find a way to do this as cost effectively as we can. I just wanted to put that in front of you because it's not in this version right now. But because of the cost, we were trying very, very hard to find ways to make this work better, and you'll see that coming up.
Okay. So, Senator Coghill, you'll give us that input for a future CS?
When we get the language and get it before you, we're hoping the CS will come out where we can lay that in front of you. We're actually working on it kind of as we speak.
And hopefully you're working with Christine as well.
Right, that's what I meant by as we speak.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator Coghill.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could just point out the costs that Senator Coghill was just referring to. It's in the fiscal note. And by putting the grant fund in the Department of Corrections, which doesn't have the staff to run a grant fund, they estimate needing six new positions. And so it's our understanding, if it were to be moved over to Health and Social Services, that they already have the infrastructure in place to manage a fund like this and would not require six new personnel. So Section 31 of the bill, and this is the last main component, this is the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. And what these sections do is it lays out the membership of the commission, the staffing, how often the meetings are conducted, the powers and duties of the commission, methodology of the commission, and the fact that they must submit an annual report to the legislature once a year. And the last few sections here, sections 32 through 38, are really applicability transitional provisions. We've got effective dates in here. One thing I want to bring to your attention is the commission has a five-year sunset, which is reflected on page 23. The section of the bill that requires the DOC conduct more assessments, that has a delayed effective date of January 1st, 2016. That's to give the department a little bit of time to transition into that new responsibility. And then, of course, the overall effective date for the bill is July 1st, 2014.
Okay, thank you. Jordan, I think we got the time, so why don't we go ahead and visit the fiscal notes while we're on the subject. You'll have to tell us which one we're looking at so we can follow along.
Mr. Chairman, we could, if you'd like, we could look at the Department of Corrections fiscal note first. So that is fiscal note number 7.
Some of these are numbered. Some of them don't appear to be numbered.
Dated 2/13/14.
That is correct.
Second to the last. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, it's OMB component number 694.
Okay, I got it. Okay, go ahead. Thank you, Senator Furkow.
So, Mr. Chairman, you can see here the total operating is $6.6 million and some change. However, I do want to point out that about my understanding of this fiscal note, and I'm new to fiscal notes, but the $3.3 million under, it says here in the left-hand column, 1005 general fund program, that is money that's coming back to the state through the offender fees paid by the 24/7 sobriety program. But looking at the analysis here on the second page, the department does not expect a fiscal impact for a few sections of our bill. That would be the first few sections that deal with the attempted child abduction. They do not expect a fiscal impact in increasing the felony theft threshold. But where the fiscal impact begins is 24/7 sobriety. And this fiscal note is predicated on three assumptions. The first assumption is that 2,400 offenders will enter the program. And that number was based on, that is the number of people that were released before trial last year. And so this fiscal note assumes that everyone who was released before trial last year, a judge would court order them to 24/7 sobriety. And whether that's realistic or not, I imagine that's for the committee to discuss. And the second assumption that it's based on is that this will cost $10 per day to conduct. And now that's a significant increase than what other states are paying. So South Dakota pays about $2 a day for 24/7 sobriety. I've heard here that we could do it in Alaska for $4 or $5 a day. And so I'll admit I'm a little confused by the $10. And the department is online, Deputy Commissioner Ron Taylor, and he may be able to speak better to those assumptions than I could. And then the final assumption made here is the Department of Corrections assumes that the offenders will spend an average of 6 months on the program. In working with Nancy Mead in the court system, who's here in the room, it's our understanding that that average is a bit high. And in fact, it should be 5 months if you look at the average time to adjudication. So by multiplying those three numbers together, we come up with $4.3 million. However, the analysis here says that receipt support services will pay for the program. So at $10 a day, assuming all of the offenders on the program can afford $10 a day and will pay that, there ought to be no ultimate fiscal impact to the state.
So, I don't know if I understand this correctly. There's going to be 31 new people hired to do this service?
Mr. Chairman, the 31 people that's requested in different is requested in different sections of the fiscal note, the 24/7 sobriety program, they don't anticipate needing new personnel. The new personnel comes in at the next part of the analysis, PACE, and then they also say they need new personnel for something on the third page, that's the risk needs assessments.
Okay.
All right, so the next part of the analysis is PACE for probation and parole. And the Department of Corrections estimates needing 14 new positions. That would be 8 probation officers, 5 criminal justice technicians, and 1 office assistant. And really, adding probation officers to the department would be the legislature allocating, changing the way that the Department of Corrections allocates their resources. Currently, the department spends almost all of its budget and all of its full-time positions on secure confinement. And small portions they delegate to community monitoring, reformative programs, and so this really would be a shift in the way that DOC does business. So on the third page, the analysis continues, and this is where we mandate that the Department of Corrections conduct more assessments. The reason that they are asking for 11 probation officers is probation officers are actually used in the institutions, and that's where assessments occur. And so the probation officers, they have a slightly different training, and they're able to do these risk needs assessments, identify people that need help and need treatment. And so these 11 probation officers would be spread out among 10 different facilities all over the state. Finally, the Recidivism Reduction Grant Fund, because this would be a new responsibility for the DOC, they say they will need 6 new positions. That would be a Grants Administrator 3, 2 Grants Administrator 2s, an Accounting Technician, an Internal Auditor, and an Admin Assistant. That comes out to $600,000, which as we spoke about earlier, it's possible that the Department of Health and Social Services can take on the responsibility of the fund without additional personnel.
Hmm. Okay, let's hope they can. All right, any questions on that fiscal note? It's a fairly large one. Okay, go on. Yes, Senator Olson, did you have something?
Well, at the end, I'd like to ask a question on the fiscal note in general.
Okay. All right.
So Mr. Chairman, I'm done running through the fiscal note. I will say, though, that I think there are a lot of incorrect assumptions in the 24/7 sobriety section, and I think that there are some things that could be looked at carefully there.
Okay. There are other fiscal notes, right?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. We have another one from the court system.
That was $320,000?
That is correct. When the Alaska Sentencing Commission existed in the early 1990s, they staffed the commission with 3 people, an attorney, a research analyst, and an admin assistant. And because the commission that we propose really duplicates the responsibilities that earlier sentencing commission had, we opted to go for the same setup. So what this fiscal note says is the court system, the judicial council will need an attorney, they'll need a full-time secretary, and they need a full-time research analyst. And this commission does not have an executive director, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, do you agree with this fiscal note as well?
You know, Mr. Chairman, it's hard to say. I think that would be a policy call of the committee whether to push back on that or not.
Okay. Is there any more?
Those are the only 2 of the fiscal impact.
Okay, Senator Olson.
Mr. Schilling, as you look at the whole situation, I'd like to go back to the idea of the felony cutoff of $750. If we do bring it up to a significant amount, let's say $1,200 or even close to $1,500, do you see an effect to the fiscal note there where you're not going to be prosecuting felons and there'd be savings in the long run related to that? Or is that a theory that's out there that has no substance to it?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Caulfield.
What I'll try to do, first of all, Senator Olson, is I'll try to get a side-by-side comparison of what a felony conviction cost and what a misdemeanor or property crime would cost. There is going to be some difference. There's no doubt about that. And I can extrapolate it against how many charges we would expect in a year. That might be a little more difficult because presently we charge and then negotiate out or do some bargaining, so they might get charged with a felony and end up only being convicted on a misdemeanor. So I'll try to weed through that as best I can. My expectation is to save money on that, but the real savings in my view is going to be that restitution is going to be easier to be gotten to, and people will not have to have a felony charge on their life or a felony conviction on their life when it really doesn't fit the level of charge or conviction.
I totally agree, Mr. Chairman. And last last comment or question that I have has to do with one of the things that Senator Kelly brought up, was that if you have 10% of the people in Alaska, like they do in South Dakota, that are being tested electronically or not face-to-face anyway, and you do have an issue where you have some person out there in Tutuliak or Kaktovik, and their meter goes off the peg and shows that they've been drinking, and you got to get out there, and it's going to be fairly expensive, I think, to unless there's some way you can restrict them from getting that far away, but you charter an airplane or have them even get on a regular scheduled flight, that gets expensive for them to come on in, and many times these people are resistant to get on, so they may need some coaxing. So I see that as being a pretty expensive endeavor, being in the transportation system myself.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the expectation would be that these programs would really only be applied where they're most practicable. And so, these programs won't work in the most rural places in Alaska, places without law enforcement, VPSOs, or the capabilities with the devices.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I think there still will be some expense because I think you're still going to be able to have that. But I think if you take the population that is on the road system generally, the cost savings way outweigh those, what I would consider probably the less volume cases. So I think by the time people on monitoring pay their way, are more productive in society, doing less driving, drunk, or domestic violence, community safer, and we're not paying the $160 or $80 a day to have them in jail. So I think that the cost savings will be significant, but there are going to be those cost outliers. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at zero fiscal note OMB component 768. From the trial courts. And if you turn to page 2, paragraph 3, it says these changes will impact the court if they result in significant number of cases moving from the superior court where felonies are handled and the relative cost per case is higher to district courts where misdemeanors are often handled at a lower cost per case. However, a review of available information shows that because of the way cases in this category are prosecuted and processed, the majority of property crimes impacted by this bill are already resolved in the district court or dismissed or resolved early in the life of the case. Because of this, the bill will not have a measurable fiscal impact on the court system. So I just throw that out for the sponsor to
And Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that from the court system, but we still are going through all the efforts of making the charge. We have to get the prosecutor, so there's other charges, other costs, and I can tell you one of the issues that we were debating just in committee the other day was if somebody's charged with a felony. And it may very well get pled down. It goes on court view as being charged with a felony. And that has a lifelong impact.
Yes, it does. Okay. Thank you. Senator Fairclough, anything else?
Mr. Chairman, I'll need to read it again, but do we have auditing requirements? Will you go, is there a setup schedule? I see that we have a sunset, but is there an auditing provision then of the effectiveness and efficiency of the council?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, currently the bill does not have that.
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, that would be an expectation to have in another CS, because I do agree that the auditing provision is something that we should be doing.
Okay, Senator Kelly.
Chairman, I just had a thought that possibly to resolve some of the issues around the raising of the threshold level for felonies is that we might sunset that provision, is to make a change and sunset it so we can come back and study how it operated over the years. Just a suggestion. So.
Yeah, I think we'd want to ask somebody in the court system what they thought of that. Because if it sunsets in 4 years, depending on what side you are of that sunset, you might be a felony or it might be a misdemeanor.
And Mr. Chairman,
yes.
To be fair, even going up to this, we had to figure out an applicability measure that if somebody is charged and this goes into law before they're sentenced, how do we deal with that? And so it is going to be one of those mechanical issues on how you deal with it. So a sunset would create another mechanical, how do you do that problem, you know?
Senator Kelly?
Something also that might be interesting to do, because I think the amount is so low that it's creating problems that we never would have anticipated. I'd even be in favor of a look back and removing those felonies from people's records, because we are way under the amount. I mean, if the number you said is 2,500 and we're stuck at 500, I wonder how many years you have to go back before felony intersects with $500 in real dollars. That's probably back in the 80s sometime.
Mr. Chairman, we did at least have a graph that showed that if you're at $1,000, that's well within normal state's operation at this point. So that's why we headed in that direction.
Yeah.
And just practically, I couldn't get there yet.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, and Senator Kelly, you know, having done the work you have in FAS and myself, that sometimes, you know, these kids just don't know better, and they might steal a snow machine, and all of a sudden they're felon now. And all it really took was just someone to sit down and work with them and say, you know, you don't do that. So yeah, that is concerning. So I think you started out your presentation here saying actually, even though the fiscal notes are large, that in the long run it may actually save the state money. I think your goal here is to reduce recidivism. Do you have a goal or target of how much you hope to reduce recidivism by implementing a program like this, or is this just a conceptual thought, or have you given that much analysis?
Mr. Chairman, so most of the programs in here are evidence-based programs. There's a lot of data. There's a lot of states that are doing them, and we actually have real tangible numbers on the reduction of jail days for people in PACE, for example. Currently, the department is experiencing a drop in recidivism about a percentage point over 3 or 4 years. We obviously expect ours to do much more dramatic than that. And I can get numbers to the different offices to project some savings if you'd like.
Okay, very good. And then also, what do you do with those that can't afford the $10 a day testing? Are we setting up another kind of Medicaid-type program, or we'd have to fund that for folks?
Mr. Chairman, it is certainly possible in Alaska to conduct 24/7 sobriety for much less than $10 a day. However, it is...
$10 a day, so.
One would hope, if they are sober, that they can come up with $2 a day. We have heard anecdotally from other states that are doing 24/7 that it just simply has not been an issue for them. I believe it would be unconstitutional to jail someone due to their inability to pay.
Okay. I just hope we're not, by accident, having to set up another fund to help fund those who can't afford to pay for the daily testing. So you're going to work for my office on a new CS, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And I'll have to say, too, we seem to create a lot of task force, so that scares me a little bit. So I too, want to read the bill a little more closer. I know Senator Kelly's had us reading that Senate Bill 138, that little bill, so probably everyone needs to take another look at this. And then we'll have a CS hopefully ready in the next day or two. So I see no need to meet tomorrow unless you guys just want to come here and have fun again. Okay. We'll cancel or we'll adjourn this meeting and not meet at all tomorrow. And then plan on coming back Monday at 9. I think we're going to take up Senate Bill 138. If not, we do have some other bills scheduled. That would be the extending the Seismic Hazard Safety Commission, another commission. That's Senator Bishop's. And then there's House Bill 298, Confidentiality of Performance Reviews. I think that's Speaker Schnultz. And we'll take those up if Senate Bill 138 is not ready. Otherwise, we'll take up Senate Bill 138, the gas, at 5 o'clock on Monday. And then we'll revisit this bill on Tuesday. Hopefully, we'll have the CS, and we do plan on having public testimony on this as well. Anything else?
Mr. Chair.
Dunleavy? Yes.
If you're not meeting tomorrow, when would you like the individual whose phone went off to bring the donuts?
Oh, yeah, donuts, yes. Monday.
Thank you.
You're right. Okay, Tuesday. Senator Faircloth's not here Monday. She doesn't want to miss out on the donut. Are they both his?
Yes, Tuesday.
And, you know, we are becoming more healthier, too, and we have a doctor on the committee. So if you want to bring fruit or something else. Okay. All right. All right, with that, if there's nothing else, we are adjourned till Monday morning at 9.